Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting on thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Vinnie with a Y, because it is the most important question, and Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news. And the very special guest I have joining us today is Catherine Albrecht, Dr. Catherine Albrecht, should I say, the creator of startpage.com and the author of Spy Chips. Catherine, welcome to the program.
Hello, Vinnie. It's great to be with you and your listeners again.
We've only got a short 25-minute interview with you here today, so I haven't spoken with you for a couple of months. I've just been wondering what the news is these days from your perspective, because in New Zealand we've had this big thing about Edward Snowden and Julian Assange and Kim.com and state surveillance being exposed for the monster that it really is. I was wondering if you'd heard about that, or if there's other news going on in the world in terms of the massive surveillance apparatus that you'd like to share with the audience.
Well, you know, it sure feels like, Vinny, it's expanding almost exponentially. It's like an octopus, and its tentacles are reaching into every aspect of our lives. I think Ed Snowden has done us a massive favor by revealing the extent of really the U.S. Illegal data collection programs, which those of us who are here in the U.S. are very concerned that these data collection programs are directly violating our Fourth Amendment rights under the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution. So I think people worldwide are becoming a little bit distrustful and uneasy about the direction that the U.S. government is taking. But I think a lot of times people neglect to mention what makes all of this possible is the data collection that's occurring on a massive basis through these corporations. So if Google and Microsoft and Yahoo and Facebook and every other company under the sun weren't collecting reams of information about us and storing it on their servers for their own purposes, then the NSA would have to figure out how to collect this information themselves, and that might be a little more challenging. Instead of creating their own data collection programs, they simply access or tap into the vast volumes of information that we are providing, in many cases unwittingly, to these big corporations. So I think the blame really, the U.S. government is doing what governments will do. They will seek out and overreach and seek out information and power over people to the extent that they're allowed to get away with it. But I think it's really the corporations. I mean, I can't vote the NSA out of office, but I can certainly vote Google out of office, for example, at least out of my own office, by choosing to make a conscious decision not to participate in any kind of software program or app or other thing that these companies offer that's going to be invading my privacy. So I think what I'm really seeing is sort of a low, it's kind of a below-ground rumbling. And we've been working for a couple of years now to create StartMail, which is fully private email, as an alternative to Yahoo and Gmail and Hotmail or Outlook. And after 3 years of development, that's actually going to be launched next month on November 12th. We're officially launching it at the Privacy, Identity, and Innovation Conference in Silicon Valley. So I think what's happening is you're not seeing the kind of riots in the streets that perhaps Ed Snowden was hoping for or some of us had thought might happen, but instead what you're seeing is a kind of a quiet exodus away from these services and these products into a more private direction.
It's kind of like they've changed snail mail into email, and then email became surveil mail, and now everybody's
watched. Yeah. Well, let's talk about email for a minute, because I actually was part of the coalition of privacy organizations and experts who asked Google all the way back 10 years ago in 2004 not to launch Gmail. And few people remember this, but prior to 2004, if anybody had an email account prior to that, you may recall that one of the key parts of the terms and conditions of your account said that they would not read your mail. It was kind of like the Postal Service in our respective countries. They are charged with picking up the mail and delivering it, but certainly not with opening it and scanning it and photocopying it and reading it. I think people would be outraged at that. So in a way, the email programs that came out in the 90s and the early 2000s were really an analog of that. The idea was we're going to simply be the handler of your messages, but under no circumstances will we ever possibly read them, because that would be a direct violation of your communication privacy. And so those companies back then funded themselves by showing advertisements or by, as you may recall, you'd log on and there would be ads or there might be an ad attached to the bottom of the messages that you sent or received. And also, those accounts were relatively small. I remember in the 90s often writing to somebody and I would get a bounce back saying the person's mailbox is full and they can't accept further messages. So this was kind of a problem through the 90s and the early 2000s that it was private, but because it was free, they really couldn't make these accounts really big. And then Google came along, and I think the best way to understand Google and the immense success of the Google Corporation is once you actually understand that they are not an email provider. I know people are like, what? They're not an email company. They're not a search engine. They're not fill in the blank of whatever you might be using them for. What they really are is a market research firm, and they have been more successful than any market research firm in the history of humanity, because what they hit on is a way to get people to reveal intimate details about themselves, which can then be used for marketing purposes, which they would never volunteer otherwise. See, back in the 1980s, I actually got my undergraduate degree in marketing, and one of the courses that I took, I remember a professor saying, one of the toughest things you'll ever do is market research because people don't want to answer your questions. If you called them up and said, hey, you ever had hemorrhoids? You going through a foreclosure, worried about losing your job or maybe losing your hair? Are you feeling impotent? You having some like rashes? What's up with your marriage? You know, people would say, go to blank. You know, they just hang up the phone on you. But what Google hit on is that if you provide people with a service and then watch what they do in the service, then you can actually learn more about them than if you hired a whole army of telemarketers to call up and ask market research questions. So by giving everybody on every single computer practically in the world a window where they answer all your questions, they then get to figure out what's going on in your life on the basis of the questions you type in. So when Google made this realization, it shifted from being just a general search engine answering your questions to becoming a hugely powerful multinational corporation that thrives on the information that they're able to capture about us. Now, in 2004, I mentioned up until that point all email was private. In 2004, Google, which at that point was a very large company based on its search engine, came out and said, we want to offer email, and we're gonna one-up you. We're going to actually give you email with a huge storage space, huge storage capacity. I think it was like a gigabyte when they came out. It was like a massive. And they said there's only one catch. Of course, they didn't say this. We had to read the fine print. There was only one catch. Everything that you write in that email, all the emails that you receive and write, will be scanned and Google will begin reading them. Now, this was radically different from anything that had ever happened prior to 2004. So myself, the ACLU, Privacy Rights Clearinghouse, Privacy International, EFF, EPIC, all of the big privacy organizations, we all got together and we issued a joint letter to Google in 2004 saying, don't do it. If you guys launch this thing called Gmail, you're going to create a precedent. You're going to set a precedent that other companies are then going to follow, and if we're not careful, we wrote, all of the other email companies are going to follow suit, and there will be no more privacy in our email. Now, Google just totally disregarded us, did it anyway. People got on board because they wanted the big storage, and they didn't really bother to read the fine print. And the next thing you know, not only did our worst fears come true, because now Yahoo has followed suit. Yahoo reads all your email. Hotmail/Outlook reads all your email. So Microsoft is reading it all too. But not only that, they actually didn't just change email. They changed the entire nature of the Internet to where now virtually every single service you use online is spying on you in exchange for allowing you to use their service. And I'll give you a couple of examples. There's some services out there that will manage your mailing list, for example. And in the process of managing your mailing list, you are handing them an incredibly valuable amount of information about other people, which they fully acknowledge in their terms and conditions that they use, that they use that to figure out who's interested in what, cross-referencing the databases, using all sorts of, or using this information in all sorts of ways that you never really intended when you let them, quote, manage your database and manage your mailing list. mailing list. So MailChimp is one really good example. You can go on to MailChimp and you can see the company actually has two sides. One of them is the so-called free service, which you can just use to manage your mailing list. But then they've got a whole other side, which is all of the market research insights that they gain from having that kind of sort of in the, you know, right in the middle of things view of all of this personal private data. And that's just one of hundreds or thousands of examples of similar companies that have figured out if you can offer somebody a playground, then you can observe what they do in the playground. And if you, as long as you have your legalese right and you state what you're doing in the terms and conditions, you can get away pretty much with watching anything. And we, the people, really don't even realize that this is happening.
There was a interesting development. Analysis by New Zealand author and journalist Ian Wishart about this. Oh, if I'm not doing anything wrong, nothing will happen to me. And he says that the reason why people still think that is because they're still living in the mail world. Okay, they still think that I can send something through the mail, and there's quite a massive chance that it'll get through without me being busted or something like that, because they think that not everything's absolutely 100% surveilled at all times, so therefore there's a possibility of getting through just in going through with your normal daily business. Whether or not they don't like, the authorities don't like it, it doesn't matter, you'll still get away with the majority of whatever you do. Not the case anymore. They actually read and categorize absolutely everything. You can't get away with anything at all, full stop, unless they don't know what you're doing. And the only way to do that is to hide your activity. And unfortunately, if you hide your activity, according to Snowden and Assange, it makes you a target. And so people's, if it probably won't happen to me mentality is no longer relevant in today's modern surveillance state, is it? It will happen to you.
It's a real problem. I think people view these programs and say, oh, well, they're catching the terrorists, or they're catching the bad guys, or the drug dealers, or whoever. The problem, of course, with this one-size-fits-all blanket surveil everybody mentality is that, well, at least in the U.S., not only is it completely unconstitutional and violates every principle of law in this country, but it also, I think it should inspire outrage, that people should be saying, wait a minute, instead of saying, well, you can see whatever I do, I've got nothing to hide, instead people should be saying, I've done nothing wrong whatsoever, you have absolutely no reason to be spying on me. Do you see the subtle difference? Back in the day that the U.S. Constitution was created, and in fact our rule of law was set up even all the way back in England, the principal concept was, if you're going to investigate or shake somebody down for information, you've got to have a reason to believe that they're guilty of something. You can't just go shaking down everybody. And so in the U.S., we actually have this ensconced in law, because as when we were a colony under the British would just bust into pubs and demand that everybody, empty their pockets, or they would bust into homes and go digging through looking for seditious literature or whatever else they might have been up to. And when we overthrew the British and came up with our own system of government, we said, no more. We don't want to live like that. And unless you can actually prove that there's a crime going on, you can't just go busting in and rifling around people's stuff. And this is exactly the opposite of what's happened on the Internet. I think that the government, of course, the case that they make is, well, hang on, these companies are already collecting all of your personal data. All we're doing is accessing something that you've already surrendered a right to in the first place by allowing them to have a record of it. And I think that that's the argument, even in the back of their minds as they try to justify the kinds of things that they're doing. So, again, I'm going to put the blame right back to the corporations, that the corporations are setting this expectation of privacy invasion, just as Gmail said it all the way back in 2004. And then once that precedent gets set and people get, quote, accustomed to it, or other companies say, well, why should Google have all the action and why should they have all the data? Well, why don't we change our policies too, as Yahoo and Microsoft did? Once all the companies are doing that, then you're going to have a system in which everybody tries to get a piece of the pie, and that's what we're living in now.
I've been seeing a lot of movies lately, Catherine, and one of the recurring themes is that if we don't do it, somebody else will. And the fact of the matter is, I mean, I'm sure rapists have said that before, you know, oh, she's bound to be raped anyway, I'll just rape her myself, otherwise somebody else will get in on my action. And that's basically what's going on here, isn't it?
It's a really twisted mentality, and I've even talked to people. Let me just scoot a little bit over to talking about microchip implants, which RFID implants that I've been fighting for 10 years now. Antichips.com is one website about that, and it's really interesting because back in the day when the company, the Verichip Corporation, Applied Digital Solutions, and it's gone by a bunch of names, but back in the day when they were publicly traded on the stock exchange, a lot of people, I would actually read the message boards for their stock, and a lot of people would say, this is the most disgusting product ever. It's horrible. We should be opposing it in the streets. And by the way, I bought 1,000 shares because it's inevitable. If I don't buy it, somebody else is going to buy it, and they're going to make the money. So there's kind of a mindset, and I think it's really almost a social ill that we've fallen into this mindset that because somebody else is going to do something wrong, that we may as well do something wrong ourselves. And that's a really twisted mentality, because the reality at the end of the day, you don't have to answer for the somebody else. You don't have to answer for the state of society, but you are going to have to stand up and answer for your own actions. And there's going to be no opportunity to say, well, I only did it because if I didn't, somebody else will do it. The judge of the universe is going to look you in the eye and say, no, I don't care what somebody else did. What did you do? And if what you did was repulsive and disgusting, you're going to have to answer for that. I don't care if everybody else is doing it. I don't care if it's a universal. You're still going to have to answer for your own actions. And that certainly holds for all of these companies that are developing new products and finding ever increasingly sophisticated and sneaky ways to grab people's data. They're ultimately morally responsible for their own decisions there.
Now, I was just thinking about this last night, actually, about karma and how everybody gets what they deserve. And to me, that's absolute BS, because if that was the case, there'd be no such thing as unsolved murders, right?
Well, I'm a Christian, and I believe that all of that comes back at some future point. We've heard from a lot of people who have, quote, died, right, in operating rooms and surgeries and hospitals and accidents. And a really common theme that a lot of them report is their entire life racing before their eyes, you know, sort of the recap of your life. And I think they've had just a little bit of a taste of what it probably is like as we approach the throne of judgment, and we have to answer for every idle word that we've spoken, every crime that we've committed for which we have not been forgiven. And I do believe that, you know, when you make these kind of crafty decisions, then you are going to have to pay for that at some point, if only when the veil is lifted and you see the horribleness of what you yourself have done. That's got to be a pretty bad feeling.
Well, you know, the way I look at it, the Rockefellers and the Rothschild families and all of these other people are probably, you know, killing, raping, destroying, deceiving and stealing and what have you on a scale not ever seen before in the history of Earth, maybe even the galaxy. And I don't see them suffering any consequences of any kind whatsoever.
Well, you know, if I speak about the Bible, there's a passage in the Bible that I've actually referred to in my heart many times, and it says, the Lord knows how to save the ungodly to the point of judgment, essentially. So what it means, preserving the ungodly to the point of judgment, they're cruising along in this life, but their retirement plan looks really awful. I'll put it that way. And I'm not sure how people who don't believe in any kind of justice in a spiritual sense or any kind of afterlife would manage to process that, but I absolutely believe that people are responsible for their actions and they have to answer for them and that they are punished for them. So I have to say that makes it a little bit easier for me.
Well, sure, it might be. I mean, I look at, for example, in New Zealand, we have a very corrupt politician called John Banks who took a $50,000 donation from internet mogul Kim.com, and he asked them to split it into two checks, because if you donate more than $25,000 per donation, you have to declare who it comes from. So he specifically had a meeting with him in order to do this, and this is illegal under electoral law, so he was under electoral fraud. The police wouldn't prosecute him, the Crown prosecutors wouldn't prosecute him, and it actually took a private prosecution by a guy named Graham McCready, who advocates for people who've been screwed over by the system and what have you for the most part, to actually take personal responsibility, as well as the help of a number of activists in New Zealand, including Penny Bright and Russell Malcolm, to actually do the work that was necessary in order to bring this man to justice. And this is what I think is actually even more important than a spiritual awareness of cosmic justice and the divine will, etc., is that you can actually inflict and bring justice to the guilty and to the corrupt by taking personal responsibility for making it happen.
Amen. And I think we need to be doing more of it. I'm certainly not implying that we should all just sit back and turn the other cheek and allow any old abuses to happen. I think that there's, I mean, if you look at my own record, I've held protest signs outside of Walmart stores and picket signs and organized all kinds of opposition. In fact, the reason that the Verichip Corporation that makes those implantable microchips, the reason they're not currently traded on the stock exchange is because I worked with the Associated Press reporter, Todd Lewin, to reveal the fact that the FDA had approved that implantable microchip without reviewing studies showing that it was causing cancer in laboratory animals and even in dogs. And when that story broke, which I worked tirelessly for about 6 months to put together a report and all the research on that, which you can find at chipmenot.com, when that report broke, that company went from trading at about $11 a share to trading at 30 cents a share. They were delisted from the stock exchange. They became a penny stock, and they absolutely lost all of the market that they had. In fact, people who had been implanted with those devices quietly got those devices removed by the company. So I'm certainly no stranger to getting in the trenches and fighting back against these kinds of terrible programs and injustices. I definitely believe that there's a place for individual action. But there are some things over which we really don't have that kind of control. And you exercise control where you can and where you cannot, where I don't have power directly over the Rockefellers, but I certainly know in my heart of hearts that they will get theirs when the time comes. I have no question about it. And to me, that's a reassuring thing. So where I can have an impact now, I will, and where I can't, I know that justice is going to be meted out someday.
See, to me, it's more like I've become very jaded and cynical, like a real journalist, and the thing that I've been realizing lately is it doesn't matter whether or not I win when I fight against evil. What matters is whether or not I choose to fight it at all. It's a moral obligation that compels me to do the right thing in and of itself, and it needs no further justification than that.
Absolutely, and that's what I was talking about. When you look in the mirror at the end of the day, all you can answer for is your own actions. Did you participate in the evil and make it worse with some vague justification of, oh, well, if I don't do it, somebody else will, or everybody else is doing it, or did you stand your ground, and did you stand for what was right, even if you weren't successful? And I think morally what we're judged for at the end of the day is not our aim, but what direction we were aiming. So I kind of picture us all having targets, and we're all here with our bow and arrow, and some of our aim is right on, and we hit the point, and we hit the mark. Other times the wind blows, or something happens, or we slip, and it goes wildly off the mark. But I'll tell you, those of us who were aiming at justice and freedom and liberty and goodness and truth and honesty and health and all those other things are aiming in the right direction, and we get credit for that. Other people are aiming specifically in the wrong direction, and whether they hit or miss their mark, they've got to answer, I believe, for those poor aims. So I'm with you completely. I think that what really counts, what are you trying to accomplish in the world? And every once in a while, we get lucky, we actually accomplish it. Every once in a while, we fail miserably and do not accomplish it. But once again, I do believe that we at the end of the day, are judged on what our intentions were and how hard we tried.
I really hate the people who are just like, oh, but you're focusing on that, and it's not as important as this thing over here that you should be focusing on. It's like, bro, nobody can do everything, but everybody can do something. Thank you, Catherine.
I just wanted to answer that. On my very original website at nocards.org years ago, I once wrote an essay there. You can actually find it. It's about, with all the pain and suffering in the world, why are you focused on frequent shopper cards? That's how I got started as an activist. And I answered that actually with a true story. I was once listening to National Public Radio, and they had a story about a woman who was rescuing dogs and cats and horses from the streets of Calcutta, India. And my first thought was not, good for her. My first thought was, what are you talking about, dogs and cats? There's children dying in the streets of Calcutta. Why are you focused on dogs and cats when you should be focused on children? And it was only later that it hit me with some degree of actually ashamedness that rather than thanking this woman for doing anything at all, right, because there's millions of people who do nothing for children or animals or anybody else for that matter, I instead was blaming her for not being good enough. So instead of saying, good, you're doing something good, I was like, well, it's not good enough. How often do we find ourselves in that position where someone who's doing good is not doing good in the way we think they ought to be doing, and we judge them, whereas there are millions of people who are doing nothing at all or actively doing harm, and those people rarely receive that kind of judgment. So I would say, Vinny, if you're out there fighting anything that is in the direction of justice and right, that other people need to lay off and say thank you for focusing on that, because that frees them up to focus on their own issue, knowing that you've got the other one covered.
If somebody's doing the right thing, don't try and stop them. You know, get the get the frickin' heck out of the way, yo. All right, Catherine Albrecht has been my very special guest, ladies and gentlemen, and we will be right back just after the break. Please go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com if you want to support the broadcast, and either check out our sponsors, Blue Shield, the Gourmet Soap Kitchen in Wagga Wagga, or the High Tea Cafe. And if you want to support this broadcast specifically with your donations, there are PayPal buttons and a New Zealand bank account number on the homepage there as well. We'll be right back.